Leone, welcome, welcome to my place.
Thank you.
I have the pleasure of hosting you. What do you have today?
So today I thought we'd keep it simple. I just nipped to the good old Asian supermarket around the corner and picked up some gyozas. Mm-hmm. So we have some vegetable gyozas and some tofu gyozas.
Nice.
And of course, sriracha sauce, because you can't have a gyoza without
yes,
some
of course. I love sriracha sauce. Yeah. And thankfully, it's not too crunchy so that we do not butcher the ears of our listeners.
True. Yeah. I mean, if I notice that I've got a crunchy one, I think I'm just going to be leaning back to chew on it.
Cool. So our podcast, what was it called? Remind me?
Small plates, big ideas.
And why?
Because we want to bring out this vibe where we're able to speak about big ideas in marketing that happen in the industry, trends that we're seeing. We also want to do like educational ideas, but we want to do it in a really casual and cozy way. And what more of a cozy way to do this than to have some nibbles, have some nice tea, do it in a cozy setting.
Fantastic. So we're in my kitchen.
Yeah.
And we're on the dining table. We're going to nibble and talk, have a nice chat. Our podcast is going to be focused on mostly creative branding, marketing, digital marketing, and everything around that ecosystem.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Performance, tracking, some of the nerdy stuff, because that's mm-hmm. my jam.
All right. And I'm on the opposite side, where I'm going to be talking about creative strategy, brainstorming, all the shebang mm-hmm. that is around the creative ecosystem. Okay. So we have a tradition on the podcast where if you bring food, you also bring the topic
yes.
with you.
Yes, I love that. So the topic that I would love for us to dive into today is about something that I see shifting in the industry. And I think something that we need to move further into that direction. And that is the divide that has happened in the past between brand and performance. And why I believe that we are shifting more towards those two things coming together. When I say the divide, I'm thinking of like 5 years ago when I was working in marketing teams, and it was like the brand team versus the performance marketing team. And it was like when two tribes go to war and neither could agree. And I'd love to put that on the table today to see if there is, or like to discuss where I'm coming from and why I think about this and how you think about it from a creative standpoint. And maybe we can also unpack why that might have happened in the past, why there was this, let's say, in of heads, but in of teams between the two. But yeah, that is my topic that I am bringing to the table today.
Interesting. So now you see a big change, yeah. right? So that you're saying they're blending together as yeah. brand formants, right?
Exactly. Oh, I like that, brand formants.
Yeah.
I think we can even...
I've used it in some pitch decks in a way, but I think it's a common term right now.
Okay.
All right. So like for me, to be honest, creatives were always incentivized to come up with big ideas, something that is around award-winning aspects, something aspirational, working for the upper funnel. And mm-hmm. for those who don't know what is the upper funnel, it is where you think big, you aspire, you inspire, you really flex your muscles on storytelling, you captivate mm-hmm. the audience, and you bring brand awareness. And the system was built in the creative aspect in a way where you're proud of your work, you add it to your portfolio. And this is what every creative individual, like working in marketing, strives for. They mm-hmm. want to be the talk of town and they want to make it to the awards. And then comes marketing and performance. Before, creative wasn't measured. You'd see something on the billboard. They would measure things like, you know, vanity metrics, like how many eyeballs are passing by this highway, therefore price that billboard or MUPI and so on. There were the tactics of, let's say, lower funnel, but they were like flyers they would distribute in front of a mall or something.
Yeah.
Advertisers would pay shitloads of money
yeah.
for a page on a magazine for a takeover or on a newspaper, but you could never justify the return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
Come social media, more metrics, more tracking, and creative is cornered in a way they need to think from a performance perspective. And of course, you are going to repel to the idea, because now, instead of getting your inspiration from briefs,
mm-hmm.
from aspiration, you need to be serving the digital marketing department and their KPIs and goals. And suddenly a creative ecosystem is bombarded by metrics that is so hard to break out of in order to bring a creative idea. The last thing I'm going to bring to this topic is when you are thinking from a creative perspective, there's also the ego, the aspiration side, where when you work on transactional creative, you can't take that transactional putting portfolio. You cannot brag about it. You can brag about it as part of a whole narrative. But not saying, oh, I worked on this for this e-com company and so on. So therefore, I would implore a bit of empathy with creative, but also we need to detach ourselves from, oh, we just, you know, fly and dream without our feet on the ground. Because at the end of the day, everyone who's skilled and creative needs performance to improve. I'm going to give you two examples. A Formula One driver is highly skilled with response that is so quick that no one can actually become a Formula One driver unless they train their response system, their neurons, all that kind of stuff that's happening. And they rely on performance and data in order to perform better and to put a strategy on how they're going to win the next race or how they're going to design the next car and if it's fitting the driver and so on. It's fascinating engineering and science meeting top-notch skills. The other example is gamers as well. You train with that data. Like if you're not quick, if you're not agile, and if data is not given to you as feedback, then how can you build on your skill? For creatives, we need to be more quick and agile, and we need to create a weightage between brand and when we have that freedom to be creative. And also we need to, first of all, sometimes work on the performance bits to prove that they work so that we can go back to the brand and show that data that is going to be super, super powerful for us as ammunition, as creatives, to pitch a rebranding or a new campaign and so on. But I'm going to stop here because I want to taste the gyozas and I'm going to hear what you have to say about this.
Yes, the gyozas are good, by the way. Some of them are crunchy, so we might also have to do a bit of leaning back from the microphone.
All right.
Let's see if it picked up. Yeah, so from a performance aspect, I think that, especially when I'd say performance marketing really had the boom a few years ago, where people, and myself included, I was absolutely guilty of this, were just throwing ads out there that had absolutely nothing to do with the brand, like the ugliest creatives that, and because they were working in terms of performance, it was like they would argue and dig their feet in the ground and, you know, I'm going to die on this hill that these are the right creatives that we should be using. And I also did that. That was the narrative that we were going with at the time. And it was all, this was where the separation was going on. And I think as a performance marketer, seeing the very lower funnel metrics, it was almost like, what is the point in a brand campaign? If we can do all of this, if we can do all of this and make all of this money and have these kind of returns on investment without investing in these cinematic, beautiful campaigns and ads and all of this time and effort that goes into it, then why would we need this kind of thing? I think that this was part of the mindset that was happening. But these days, what we're seeing, especially with a shift more towards incrementality testing and mixed marketing modeling, as the industry develops and we're getting a better understanding, we are seeing that actually these campaigns, these upper funnel, beautiful branding campaigns, are heavily contributing to the lower funnel performance. So what I've noticed is when I've been looking at this kind of data is that oftentimes when, let's say if you look at a campaign stack, you know, an upper funnel campaign, a mid funnel campaign, a lower funnel campaign, you will, and if you're looking on the impact of purchases, let's say in the campaigns itself, you will always see that this lower funnel, maybe it's a retargeting campaign, the cost per purchase on that campaign will be very low. It'll be driving a lot of purchases very quickly. If you were to look at the purchases attributed to the upper funnel campaign based on a standard attribution model, it would look really bad. So this is where the idea of comes in of like, why even have those campaigns? However, if you isolate the incremental value that these campaigns bring to the business, oftentimes it's the upper funnel campaign that is bringing in most of the incremental value, because the lower funnel campaign might be mostly targeting people who would already buy anyway without the marketing need. And it is the upper funnel campaign that is bringing the new eyes and the new interest into the business that gets them into the funnel. I often don't like using the word funnel, but I'm using that to make the point.
You can say journey.
Yeah, the journey. That's a little bit nicer than the funnel, because sometimes I feel like when we talk about funnels, it's as though we're treating our audience as like lab rats almost. But in the end, it's a journey.
Look, Leonie, you mentioned incrementality testing, and those are jargons that are, you know, for our audience that are, you know, marketers, but they didn't go into details like incrementality testing.
Yeah.
What is that?
So maybe we can do a podcast on that later, but it is just a high level overview. Incrementality testing helps us to understand the overall impact of marketing. Like, what is the uplift that happens because of the marketing campaigns? It really helps us to understand the actual value. And then it helps us to understand how much budget we should put on certain campaigns, how we should allocate the budget. Because it could very well be, to go back to my earlier example, that we might have a lower funnel retargeting campaign that when you look at all of the metrics like the click-through rate and the cost per purchase, the cost per acquisition is super good, but it might not be bringing any incremental value to the business. And if we don't look at the incremental value, you might end up funneling tons of money into that campaign because you think, oh, it's driving all of these purchases. But yet the people that you're targeting would have purchased anyway. So that's like the basic overview of why we should always be doing incrementality testing, is to understand actually what value does the marketing bring. And that just ties in with what we were saying earlier about it also helped us to question, is it right that we're only doing or focusing so much on lower funnel marketing? And I'm starting to see a shift that we are needing to focus more on like this upper funnel, the inspirational stuff.
This is music to my ears, Leonie, to be honest. It's been the most pain point to kind of justify why big ideas or aspirational ideas do pay back off. But like, it's just, the fact is, from what you were saying, if I understood it correctly, it depends what are you looking at. It's the perception. Because when I was working, so I worked in creative agencies, I worked in media agencies, I worked on the client side, I worked at Pinterest before, and I worked at ad tech companies. The thing is, a lot of what I see is marketers looking at a specific attribution window. Like, okay, this is converting me, and they squeeze the lemon to the maximum, but guess what? The lemon will lose some juice, and you cannot be so obsessed with the last drop. And that's why when you talk about going through the journey, it means you get more lemons so that you can create that juice.
Yeah.
Excuse me with my metaphors, but juice goes very well with gyoza. All I'm trying to say is the industry, the creative industry and the marketing industry in general, has always struggled to justify that ROI. We always talked about frequency and reach and all that kind of stuff. And the whole market shifted to the short-term wins. And they didn't look at the strategic overlook. And I'm going to, like, just to add a bit of sprinkle here to kind of say, usually, when you go at the upper funnel, the beginning of the journey, when you want to capture more audience, you go emotional.
You always
go emotional. You can tap into nostalgia, you can tap into a specific life moment, seasons. You go through the range of emotions of a human experience.
Yeah.
And that's how you capture.
Yeah.
And what the market wants, or not the market wants, what the audience wants to see is that emotional hook. And that's what's going to convert them. But what marketers or brands usually do is that they just, most of the time, they're biased to the rational purchase, not the emotional. It's like, okay, give me your money, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And then the people who are already there, what you mentioned, they're already your customers. Yeah. You're tapping into loyalty, fan base, but also you have lifetime value.
Yeah, yeah.
If you advertise too much, and we need another episode about ad fatigue.
Yes.
But if you advertise too much to the same audience and you're so obsessed, it is going to fire back.
Of course it is.
Because you have the law of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
There's an expiry date on everything.
Yeah.
Everything has a lifespan. Why are marketers obsessed with just investing in the lower funnel.
Yeah.
For the life of me, I don't get it. It's logic in a way.
100%. Yeah. And what you just said about the, like, I just want to tie two things together because you said something really good there about the attribution model and people only focusing on one thing. In the end, an attribution model is an opinion. Whether you choose first click, last click, linear, or whether you add some kind of, well, if you're adding weighting based on incrementality testing, for example, then it becomes a little bit more mathematical. But if you're choosing the basic attribution models that are usually available in most of the reporting tools, that is an opinion that you are laying on and saying that the last click is the most valuable. That's not based on science, because actually it's very difficult to measure the different levels of value that each of the touch points brings. So yeah, we also need to do another, I don't want to go too far off the topic into that, but I just wanted to say, like, because I wanted to underline the point, what you said about only focusing on the lower funnel, only focusing on a certain attribution window and how that misses the whole bigger picture of marketing. And I wonder if part of the problem that was, I mean, you underlined it correctly in the beginning, like you framed it in a really good way, and it helped me to understand in that how much pressure was added to creative teams. But I wonder if some of this separation also happened because the teams were developed in silos with the different KPIs that they had to look at. And had in the beginning, somebody introduced this bigger picture that overall we want to understand the whole of the impact of marketing on a business. I mean, I guess it was there to some degree in a lot of businesses, but I always felt like when I was working, when I was like a little bit more junior, we never got to see the bigger picture of the business about like, what's the whole marketing team doing? We were so siloed and so focused on lower funnel and performance.
Yeah, I mean, look, I see, like, as you were speaking, I was just getting, as we say, like, small plates, big ideas. I was just thinking of like the automotive industry. We were all just into diesel and fuel. And then you had the hybrid cars who are mixing electricity with fuel, or, you know, and then now you have electric. So it's a whole evolution. Yeah. We'll talk about this in the next episode. But in general, the way teams were made to function in the traditional way, you had branding and corporate branding sitting somewhere up. They didn't share what they worked with or on. And the creative team was protective of their work and their time. And they needed that space to, they were pressured to create those ideas. And then from a performance perspective, the media landscape has changed so much.
Hmm.
Back in the day, you used to create media one-to-one. Now you create one-to-many and vice versa as well. So the variations and the accessibility and the democratization of media through a handheld device and the personalization bought more data, bought more learnings, like a fire hose to create the industry you worked in, which is, you know, the performance for digital marketing.
Happened very quickly, right?
It happened super quick. And it actually, creative was falling behind.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this whole kind of, creative never worked with digital marketers before. Like, you had the customer, the brief, and you have the account manager if you were in a creative agency. And all of a sudden you wake up and you see within like a few months or a couple of years, a new category of people that you need to work with. And you don't know what are those metrics.
Yeah.
What is a, and it's all like acronyms and it's overwhelming. Like, what is a CTA? What is a CPM? And what is a CPA? And what is a...
Honestly.
It's too much. And the change happened. But also, there was the education coming in, but people are resistant to change.
Mm.
This has to, and the agencies that really won are the agencies that were programmatic, they were open to technology, thought about it, started creating for it. And now we have this also with AI. You have that resistance as well.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, the market doesn't care about your feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
You equip yourself, you allow the technology to give you much more reach, it elevates your work. But if you're going to treat it with fear or rejection, you're just creating resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, you'll just become irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you tapped into the human emotion, because I feel like a lot of things that happen in this industry, there is so much emotion on so many levels, from the way that our ads and our creatives make people feel to the way that we feel about creating the work, right? And I feel like I've overused the word feel and it's lost all meaning, but we're still going to go with it anyway. I feel like at the very core, it taps into the human emotion of not being good enough. So for example, when the creative team realized that they had to work with a bunch of performance marketers who were pumping out ads that looked like they'd created them on Microsoft Paint, but they were getting all of the attention because it was generating so much revenue and it was so quick and easy to do and it was easy to scale, the creative people probably, was there some fear of getting like shoved out of the job because it was like, okay, maybe we're not needed anymore? Did that happen at some point?
I'm not sure if that happened. I feel like there was kind of a context that was missing in, from a creative perspective. When you're crafting for ads that are well thought, you're creating mood boards, you're creating collages, you're brainstorming, you're exchanging ideas, you're creating option 1, 2, and 3. You're pitching, you're putting passion into it. Mm. And suddenly, digital marketing and social marketing in specific, like for creatives, started becoming like the printing press.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wanted to kind of give you a shopper's experience, imagine you walk into a very well thought of department store that has a specific entrance, visual merchandising in a way, there's a flow to putting mm-hmm. the products. And then try to contrast this with a bazaar. Yeah. Of people yelling, saying, 5% discount, buy one, buy two, get one free. I'll give you a free something with this, and they bundle. And therefore, you are comparing really an experience from a shopper's perspective that is retail crafted with a journey, with a music in mind, with an experience. Versus a place. You go to a bazaar because you want to get deals,
mm-hmm.
because you want to capture something that is, you know, too good to, I don't know, walk away from. But you intentionally go to a very well, a brand that has an experience like Apple, and you walk through and you look at the devices and you take your time. And creative was done in a way to serve that use case.
Mm-hmm.
You need to, you know, capture, and it needs to resonate, it needs to tell a story and bring your emotion.
Yeah.
And then you'll have a bias or this nostalgia or an emotional appeal to that. And then you're going to convert. Even if you don't convert at the moment, you go back and you think, I really like this pair of shoes. I really like that new iPhone.
Yeah.
I respect the design. I like the new features. I like, you know, that kind of stuff. And sometimes you take your time to kind of capture that message. And with digital marketing evolving in a way to bring social, and what you're talking about, that frequency of like printing press, very quick creatives, it's touch-ups, it's finalizing, it's not well-thought creative processes, but it has a different function. There's no wrong and right again.
No.
You need to opt in and out. The best scenario is to create that whole journey and link the consistency from the beginning of the journey to the end.
Yeah.
And have brand guidelines that allow to become a framework so that your brand, whatever it needs to present itself, has a really solid ground to stand on.
Yeah.
And therefore you rinse and repeat.
Yeah. It makes sense. And I'm glad that you said that, because I was thinking, we're talking about performance going up the funnel to support creative, to give them direction, to give you guys direction, to say like, hey, we're seeing this as like really performing in terms of it's bringing a lot of incremental value. And then if we want to say that creative can support performance marketers going down the funnel by saying, hey, we understand that, you know, performance creatives have a different need to the upper funnel creatives, but in the end, we still don't want to be putting out these like Microsoft Paint No disrespect to Microsoft Paint, but we all know the standard of what's going on there. When we're creating these kinds of things in there, but like to elevate the performance creatives, but in a way where it still gives the performance marketers freedom to do this kind of print and press quick speedy advertising?
I think it really matters on, we say content also needs to be defined in context.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example of the social ecosystem. Where do you go right now on the social channels for inspirational storytelling from brands? It's YouTube.
Yeah.
And it's Pinterest. It's polished. It captures you. It's giving you a lot of clean, well-thought, creative to explore on digital.
Yeah.
So I would say like Pinterest is like the Vogue magazine, the Cosmopolitan magazine, the very well-thought photography editorial aspects.
Yeah.
And then YouTube has that of TVC equivalence in a way. But then on the other side of the spectrum, with salesy bazaar-like, you see that on Amazon ads, you see that on Meta.
Mm.
Instagram is a bit more polished, but it's actually really capturing what it took from the former Facebook and so on. So you have a mix of both. But what I wanted to kind of bring to the table here is to kind of just tell you that the context, which is the platform, defines the creative in a way. And I can see Meta finding it very hard to go up the funnel.
Yeah.
In specific, for specific advertisers, let's say luxury and so on, which is a very easy win for YouTube and Pinterest.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa, for YouTube, you cannot see lower funnel aspects. You know, you do with a bit of their ads and so on.
Yeah.
But upper funnel and mid funnel are much more powerful there.
Yeah.
Because the mindset of the audience and what they expect from the creative or the ads they see. I see Pinterest going more shoppable down the it's easier for them to kind of go down the funnel.
Yeah.
Because they've already established something that is tough to crack.
Yeah.
And then they go from there. And that's where the quality comes in. And it's harder for, it would be interesting to see how advertisers on Meta or how Meta kind of gets branding much more powerful and creates a mindset to dominate a bit on the branding side.
Yeah.
You can see branding, don't get me wrong, like a telecom ad or a banking ad and so on, but it does not feel the same. You feel that the audience is different. Like if I see it on YouTube, I think it's going to create that brand awareness that is much more sticky.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree.
I agree with that. I would say that on Meta, there is less, and this is Facebook and Instagram, there's less room for storytelling. I don't know if it's the speed that people use the platform at, because it's very quick. So people are just expecting to see like pop, 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 different ads and different pieces of content. You even see it with the type of organic content that's created on there, right? Everything is focused on like maximum to 2 minutes. I know that TikTok's kind of the same. They've just introduced.
I wanted to ask you about that, like, because you're talking about speed and like TikTok, where does it sit for you in the funnel? And like, as someone who's working on performance, if you had to advise and consult an advertiser or a big brand, where would you position them in terms of context and creativity?
So in terms of TikTok, even though it's a speedy platform, I would say that I would position it as more of an upper funnel, not necessarily for storytelling, but for volume, because there is so many users on there. And in general, when you're advertising on TikTok, they let's say, and I'm going to get into some nitty-gritty detail, when you're in the TikTok ads manager and you start to put your targeting on, it very quickly tells you, no, this targeting's too narrow, you need to broaden it. And when you look at the audience size, it's pretty big. When you apply similar, because obviously it's never going to be the same, when you apply similar targeting on Meta and you look at the audience side, Meta says that this audience is broad. So just in the way that the two platforms interpret the audience sizes, to me, TikTok is a, I don't want to say like a spray and pray platform where they're just pumping impressions out, because there's more of a performance aspect to it than that. But the audience size is much broader. The reach is a lot higher. But I wouldn't say that it is a platform where you can tell a really long story. Like, for example, I don't know if you've seen it. Disney have just released this holiday advert that's like 4 minutes long.
Okay.
It's a very emotional thing about a kid that goes into the sea and finds an octopus. sounds a bit weird now when I'm thinking about an octopus and a Christmas ad, but it's a long ad, right? It's a long ad. I wouldn't suspect that maybe if it's Disney, it might work on TikTok because obviously Disney have already got the brand. But I wouldn't recommend for somebody to put a 4-minute ad live on TikTok purely because of the speed of the platform. However, if you want to deliver impressions and get share of voice and start to have an impact and bring people into your customer journey, not funnel, your customer journey, TikTok would be the place to go. I also don't know on the other side if it's because the TikTok platform in terms of performance is far less advanced than Meta, which is to be expected because Meta's been around for a lot longer than TikTok. And I think TikTok is still finding, they're still making a lot of changes with how the performance side looks in terms of the features that are available. So it could also be, because in my experience, when I've ran performance campaigns on TikTok, they have not been anywhere near as lucrative as the Meta performance campaign. So it could also be a platform maturity situation why that is. Because if you were to ask me based on what we've just talked about, when we're talking about speed and storytelling, TikTok should be lower in the funnel, but it's not quite there in terms of performance.
It's surprising and eye-opening for me to hear that because like from a creative perspective, I would just put them in the mid to lower funnel because of the what you're talking is lacking in performance. I think what they do is they compensate with word of mouth, affiliate marketing, creators in a way, and trends. A lot of like, I don't know if we could call them trends or fads because maybe they would last for like shorter periods.
Yeah.
But I would say that it is content speed at steroids. I always say that TikTok is like you taking the remote in the early days where your dad is zapping channels and just like scrolling. And there's one thing that's going to stop you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hook in a way. But most of it is actually TikTok is built on people trusting people than people trusting brands.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take that brand and talk about it. And I found this on TikTok. I bought this on TikTok, you know? And that's the difference. And I feel like we can't compare it to Meta. Meta is more of the brand's voice. TikTok is the people's voice in a way. If I had to kind of like
sum it up.
Yeah. So wherever you go in the journey, the main element or the formula of TikTok is always going to put the people to talk about the brands.
Yeah.
So think about like rating and reviews and testimonials.
Influencers.
In a audiovisual power rather than the brand crafting stories. And so you have more creative freedom there. But then when you have creative freedom, that means you're not going to have consistency. You're going to have different styles. And that's a democratization again of content creation.
Yeah.
And that's what's getting the others to sweat and catch up to the game because of this whole people trust people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, if you go before social media, the forums and blogs were the earlier TikTok because you would discuss things. And today's new version is Reddit. And now they're building up their advertising offering again because they're getting the audiences and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen their stock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can also see it reflected in the advertising platform. Like absolutely. That thing has come on leaps and bounds in the last year.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we circled off like a little bit on the topic, but I feel like we unpacked so many good things there about like, I love the fact that we were able to, and maybe we can even deep dive. I also feel like we've generated about 5 ideas for new episodes, but like actually understanding the ecosystem of digital marketing, because I think you brought some really good points to the table about how to use YouTube and how to use Meta and how to use TikTok and where, you know, at what point should you be hitting the audiences? Because I think a common misconception is that people should be hitting all channels sometimes. And yeah, this is definitely something for another episode, but that people should be hitting all channels at all times. And you just really perfectly underlined that and said, actually, it might not be the case because every channel has its own use case, its own
it's personality.
Way.
Yeah, you know, the closest way I would say it, but thank you for that. Like, would you, when you watch CNN, is it the same mindset you have or expectation? And then when you flip the channel and watch ESPN? It's totally different. You're not expecting the ads you see on CNN to be similar to a kid's channel and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So as an advertiser, you have to think, okay, I'm going to promote chocolate chip cookie on TNT or Cartoon Network or whatever, but I'm going to promote Old Spice and whatever on
BBC News.
BBC News and so on. Really? And it just, I'm baffled. I'm like shocked, like with marketers like treating all social media platforms the same.
Yeah.
You have different psychographics, you have different demographics and so on.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to rant much more about this, but I did learn a couple of things also from you in terms of the performance bits of where do you look at and how is it very different in terms of attribution and so on. Hearing your perspective on TikTok also was really something I'd never thought of before. So thanks for shedding light on that. But yeah, I mean, I really love this topic about brand and performance.
I think
we could easily have a part two.
But yeah, like, I think so. Let's stick with part one. Let's see what our audience likes. And yeah, thank you for bringing all of your metaphors because you frame things so well. And when you're saying them, I'm damn. Yeah, he's good at that. It's this visual aspect that you got in your brain.
Well, that's at least like for you getting me gyoza. I ate more than you did, so really good ones. Thanks so much, Leonie.
Thank you for hosting.
It was a pleasure talking to you. And until the next time.
Yeah, until next time.